July 10th, 2014, Bhaktivedanta Manor in London. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 2, Texts 4 through 9. Text 4, we have 9 on the board, I believe. Yes. Okay, text 4. Once at night, while it was raining, a tiger entered the land of the cowshed. Upon seeing the tiger, all the cows who were lying down got up in fear and scattered here and there on the land. So who was guarding the cows? Anybody remember? It's a hard one to say. Prashadra. Yes. And who is he? Who is Prashadra? He's the prince. He's the son of Manu, right? And he's become a Gopala, right? We were talking a lot yesterday about Gopala. So, text 5 through 6. When the very strong tiger seized the cow screamed in distress and fear, and Prashadra, hearing the screaming, immediately followed the sound. He took up his sword, but because the stars were covered by clouds, he mistook the cow for the tiger and mistakenly cut off the cow's head with great force. So there must have been no moon. There was no moon, and just some stars, but even the stars were covered. There were clouds, and of course there were no electric lights, and he just couldn't see. So he was following the sound. Who else made a mistake when they were fighting with sound? Who made a very serious mistake when they were fighting with using sound? Dasarath, yes. What did he, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gonitai. What was Dasarath think? What did he think that he was shooting at? An elephant, actually, a little elephant drinking from the water. And what was it actually? It was a young man. So he ended up killing a man. What was the result of that? He got cursed. Yes, the young man's parents cursed him to die in separation from his son. They said, just like we're going to die in separation from our son, you'll have to die in separation from your son. Was that really a curse? In his case, no, because he died in great separation from Ram and great detachment from Kaikeyi. So it was actually quite a benediction for him. And here we're going to see with Prasadra, we're not going to see that today, but those of you who will read the following verses, you'll see that Prasadra's, this action of his, ended up to be a great benediction for him. This mistake that he makes in cutting off a cow's head instead of a tiger's head ends up catapulting him into renunciation and bhakti in ways that he probably wouldn't have done so otherwise. So Krishna is so kind that he uses even our mistakes for good purposes. So text 7. Because the tiger's ear had been cut by the edge of the sword, the tiger was very afraid and it fled from that place while bleeding on the street. So he did manage to get rid of the tiger. He didn't kill the tiger, but he got rid of it in the process. When he cut the cow's head off, he nicked the tiger's ear and the tiger ran away. Text 8. In the morning, when Prasadra, who was quite able to subdue his enemy, saw that he had killed the cow, although at night he thought he had killed the tiger, he was very unhappy. So this happens when we make mistakes too, right? We figure out, oh, I made a mistake. And this unhappiness on Prasadra's part, dukkitam, is natural for any civilized person. Srila Prabhupada says in reference to Maharaj Parikit insulting Shamakarishi that this remorse, this repentance on the part of the devotee frees them from sinful activity. So this is very important. Generally speaking, materialistic people never like to admit that they've made a mistake. This is one of our big problems with, you know, he's a politician, he's Manu's son, he's a royalty. And this is one of the big problems we have with our modern government leaders, particularly government leaders, that they just won't admit they've made a mistake, even when they're caught. Yes? Even they're caught, it's obvious, you know, there's photographs, there's videos, there's recordings, and no, I didn't do it. No, I didn't do it. No, I didn't do it. And so we should learn that the attitude of the Vaishnava, the attitude of even just a high-class person, is if I've made a mistake, all you have to do is very simple, you just say, I'm sorry. And not like we did when we were a little child and we said, I'm sorry, can I get out of the corner now? But, you know, to feel some genuine remorse. And it doesn't matter whether it was intentional or not. Right? Although sometimes it's harder to feel remorse when it was intentional. Sometimes our attitude is, well, it was accidental, why should I feel remorse? But, you know, if you spill milk by mistake, you still clean it up. And sometimes the more intentional it was, the harder it is to apologize, because then we feel that we're really admitting that we have some deep fault, that someone's going to see beyond our pretense of being a wonderful person and see that we actually have some bad qualities. But the reality is that most people, not everyone, but most people are far more likely to trust us if we admit our mistakes rather than if we pretend we never make them. Yeah. Especially when it's obvious that we've made mistakes. So to go on pretending and pretending and pretending that one is God doesn't really impress anybody, and it shows that we're not trustworthy. So we have this deep unhappiness. Okay, the verse that's on the board. Translation. Although Prasadra had committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest Vasistha cursed him, saying, in your next life, you shall not be able to become a Kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a Shudra because of killing the cow. Did that happen? No. Did not happen. Which is fascinating that it didn't happen, that the curse of a Brahmana like Vasistha was ineffective. I mean, we think about when the four Kumaras told Jai and Vijay they would fall, and Lord Narayan comes, he said, I cannot counteract the curse of my devotees. But here we find that this curse did not take effect. Prasadra had no next life at all. He went back to home, back to Godhead. Purport. It appears that Vasistha was not free from tamagun, the mode of ignorance. As the family priest or spiritual master of Prasadra, Vasistha should have taken Prasadra's offense very lightly. But instead, Vasistha cursed him to become a Shudra. It is the duty of a family priest not to curse a disciple, but to give him relief through the performance of some sort of atonement. Vasistha, however, did just the opposite. Therefore, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that he was durmati. In other words, his intelligence was not very good. Tam shashapa kulacharya kritagasam akamataha nakshatrabandhu shudrastram karmana bhavitamuna. Although Prasadra had committed the sin unknowingly, his family priest Vasistha cursed him, saying, in your next life, you shall not be able to become a Kshatriya. Instead, you shall take birth as a Shudra because of killing the cow. So why don't we all think about for a minute? This just doesn't go where I want it to go. Maybe if you put the whole thing up. There we go. Okay. Yeah, all right. So when I read this, I think about, you know, sometimes when I committed a serious mistake. Who here has ever committed a serious mistake in their life? Right. Wonderful for some of you. So you've done two of them, huh? So I think when we've really done a serious mistake, and how did we want other people to respond? How do we want other people to respond? We want them to be forgiving. We want them to be understanding. It's kind of embarrassing even to talk about this. But anyway, I had a time when I was overseeing a construction project, and I was the senior person there. The other people working with me were literally teenagers and in their early 20s. And we had a contract signed with a builder. And my father had even said to me, make sure you have the contract looked at by a lawyer, by an attorney. And I didn't listen to him. I should have listened to him, and I didn't. And the result was that the contractor cheated us, and it was awful. The consequences were really awful. He stole materials, and he stole money, and it was just a terrible thing. And I paid a high price for it. I mean, I had to work for the next year on a court case with this guy. But what was interesting is that the other people involved, I learned my lesson. I hope I learned my lesson, Krishna. Anyway, the other devotees that were involved in the project never criticized me, even though they also suffered because I made this mistake. You know, they didn't criticize, never, they never said a harsh word to me at any time. And I've had other times when I made a mistake and people were harsh with me for the next 10 years. Do you remember when you did that? Yeah, I fixed it. I apologized. So how do we want to be treated when we've made a mistake, especially a mistake like this where he just had no idea? It was, in one sense, it was out of his control almost. It was ignorance. He couldn't see. And he's trying to kill the tiger as fast as possible. So we want some understanding. Yeah? If you can think back to the last time you made a serious mistake. And we wanted people to understand what was going on in our mind, what was going on in our heart, why we made that mistake. Okay? And the reason I didn't see a lawyer is I didn't want to spend Krishna's money on the lawyer. I thought it's not necessary. It's a simple contract. I can review it myself. That was what I was thinking, although it was, in the end, it ended up to be very foolish. So he was thinking, I better get the tiger right away. I don't have time to figure out what's going on here. I just need to act. So we want some understanding, want some compassion. We want some compassion that who's the one really suffering? The person who makes a mistake is, right? If you can think back to when you really, really made a bad mistake, and like Prasadra Hill, Dukit, he felt very bad. When we do something wrong, we're churning inside with shame and remorse and grief. Especially if our mistake caused harm to somebody else. We want someone to have compassion upon us. We don't want somebody to further hurt us. And then we'd like to know a way to fix it. That's what Prabhupada says here, that Vasistha should have told him how to fix it. And what's the process of atonement? We want to know how to rectify it. Sadhguru Maharaj talks about when he was Prabhupada's secretary, that Prabhupada dictated a letter, and Sadhguru Maharaj had typed it, and in the letter it says, I'm enclosing such and such paper. Nowadays with email, that would mean adding an attachment to an email. But he neglected to enclose the paper. He mailed it off without the paper, and then Srila Prabhupada found the paper and said, why is this here? You were supposed to put it in the letter. And Sadhguru Maharaj describes that his reaction was just self-criticism. He was just sitting there saying, I'm just a fool. And Prabhupada saying, why did you do that? Why did you forget to enclose the letter? And Sadhguru Maharaj just keeps criticizing himself. I guess I'm not a good disciple. I guess I didn't hear you properly. On and on and on like that. And Prabhupada's just not letting up on him. And finally, Sadhguru Maharaj stops and says, oh, I know what I'll do, Srila Prabhupada. I'll write another letter from me saying that it was my mistake, not yours, and enclosing the other paper. And then Prabhupada was immediately fine. So we want some means of rectification. In that case, Srila Prabhupada wanted Sadhguru Maharaj to figure it out for himself. But we want some way of rectifying. We want to know, what can I do to fix this? What can I do to fix this? And if the person gives us a punishment, we want the punishment to be appropriate. So if you accidentally kill a cow, you don't want to be cursed from being the son of Manu to becoming a Shudra. He said, even Nakshatriya Bandhu, you're not even worthy to be called the friend of a Kshatriya. So that was very harsh. That's very harsh. If he had killed the cow intentionally and knowingly and maliciously, that would be different. But that was not the circumstances. So, this is one of the tenets of a civilized society, is no harsh or unusual punishments. It's part of the Constitution of the United States. You can't give a harsh or unusual punishment. That the punishment should fit the crime. And worldwide society has indignation when a person gets a punishment that's out of sync with their crime. Like some of these countries where, if somebody commits adultery, they stone them to death or something. We recoil at these kind of things. Well, why are you executing somebody for a crime like this? We have an innate sense of fairness, and we want the person to accept us as a person. We want whoever has been harmed, or in this case Vasistha, of course, wasn't directly harmed, but we want our authorities or who's ever harmed to accept that we're a person, that we're fallible, that we make mistakes, to accept us holistically, not just to look at our mistake in isolation, right? Sometimes it's like that. Somebody does something wrong and that's all we see in them. We just see, oh, you did something wrong. We don't see them as a complete person. And certainly a guru should do this. Certainly. Maybe an ordinary person loses their temper and acts in the mode of ignorance and gives some unjust punishment and just condemns the person. I mean, in fact, we think of these sort of persons as abusive. You know, if you do something wrong and for an unknowing, unconscious, unplanned, unmeditated mistake, the person gives you some severe punishment and condemns you, and, you know, that we consider that very much abusive. And in fact, Prabhupada is saying this isn't the mode of ignorance. This isn't even the behavior of an ordinary person in the mode of passion. So why is it that Vasistha is behaving like this? It's practically incomprehensible that Vasistha, who's not only the family guru of Manu, who else is he a guru of? Lord Ramachandra. But he's behaving like this. How is this possible that he's behaving like this? In fact, Vasistha's behavior is really much worse than Prasadra's behavior. There's this warning by Dharma the Bull to be very, very careful about naming and punishing a perpetrator. You did it and you should be punished. That this mentality can put us into the same category as the original perpetrator. So in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on this verse, to which Srila Prabhupada alludes by saying that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said that he was Dormati. I mean, in the verse itself, it doesn't say that Vasistha was in Tamagun. And Srila Prabhupada is saying this. This is coming from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's purport. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also references the sixth canto in regard to the story of Vishwaroop. Okay? Now let's see, which one of you can figure out what the Sanskrit word that I pointed out as being the most important in this verse has to do with the story of Vishwaroop in the sixth canto? Yes, Kulacharya. What does that have to do with Vishwaroop? Excellent. Why would Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur be saying that the reason that Vasistha is in the mode of ignorance, or is influenced by the mode of ignorance, is described by Vishwaroop in reference to this word Kula Acharya? Yes. That was, yes, Vishwaroop was from both the demons and the demigods, and he was giving. But this happens a little before that, when Vishwaroopa is requested to become the Kula Acharya of the demigods. What does he say? What does Vishwaroop say when he's requested? Anybody remember? I don't remember if it was Lord Brahma or Lord Vishnu who warned them that Vishwaroop had some attachment. He agreed, but he said there was a problem. But he didn't give that problem. Yes? Yeah, he had three heads. Yeah, he definitely had three heads. But what did he say was the problem? He said, I agree to become your Kula Acharya, but... And that's the key as to why Vasistha here is influenced by Tamaguna and doesn't act properly. Anybody remembers? He said, no one should become a hired priest. He said, it's a very bad idea to become a hired priest. He said, I'm doing it because you're the demigods, you're my seniors. And because you're senior to me, therefore I'm going to follow your instruction, even though doing this will be harmful for me. So I'm willing to do something that's harmful for me to serve you because you're my seniors. But being a hired priest is not a proper occupation for a brahmana. Why? I mean, there's even strong karmic incentives not to do it. If you look at the purport in that, which I didn't write down, sorry. If you look at the purport of that verse where Vishwaroopa speaks this, Srila Prabhupada talks about the fact that when you're a hired priest, you remove the karma of the person for whom you're doing the yajna, but guess what happens to that karma? Right, your own piety diminishes. Basically, you're giving part of your piety to that person. They're paying you for some of your piety. So if you keep doing that, you're going to fall from your position. You're going to get influenced by tamagun. You're going to decrease in sattvagun. So there's a karmic incentive for a person not to take that kind of job, not to do that. So why? What's wrong with it? I mean, what's really, really fascinating is that it's in Tamagun not to give a donation to your priest. That's what's explained in the Bhagavad Gita. A sacrifice in Tamagun is where you don't give a donation to the priest. I mean, in general, we were talking yesterday about gratitude. If you take something from someone and you don't give them anything in return, then you're in ignorance. And the brahmanas are dependent on donations. They don't have a job. So if you ask help from a brahmana and you don't give them any kind of donation, your whole sacrifice gets in the mode of ignorance. But then it seems like that if the priest takes the donation, the priest is in ignorance. What in the world is going on here? And of course, this is something that's very relevant in a very specific way for our Hare Krishna movement, but it's also very relevant in general. How does one avoid falling into ignorance when doing one's duty? I mean, specifically, it's important for us because we have a lot of debates in our movement about whether or not devotees should be paid for their services. I know this is a debate that's specifically gone on here at the manor. You know, is it right? Is it wrong? And again, it's so interesting because if you're the recipient and you don't pay, you're in ignorance. If you're the recipient of the jagya and you don't pay, you're in ignorance. But if you're doing the jagya and you're getting paid, you're in ignorance. What are you supposed to do? What's supposed to happen here? So that both people can be in the mode of goodness. So I found this very bewildering, and I must admit that I've been meditating on this for hours and hours and hours yesterday and this morning. Why? What's the problem here? Why is this that put Vasistha in the mode of ignorance? So I'll tell you what I came up with. As you know, right before I did my puja this morning, it was like, oh, that's what it is. So you can tell me whether you think it's right or not. That tamagun means the opposite of dharma. It's the opposite. Ultimate dharma, savaipum sampro dharma yato bhaktira hoksaje hoitukiya pratita yadyatma supersediti. Ultimate dharma is when I want to please the Lord simply to make him happy. That's ultimate dharma. Sarva dharma and prachaja mame kam sharanam vraja. I'm just giving to you, Lord, with no thought for myself. Now, of course, that with no thought for myself doesn't mean that I'm empty and miserable and suffering. But with no thought for myself, because as soon as I'm connected with Krishna, I talk about this a lot, I'm completely full. And Prabhupada explains that the devotee doesn't have material desires because they're full. It's not that they don't have material desires because they're empty, like somebody trying to do jnana yoga, who tries to empty themselves. So the devotee is not just empty of desires. Rather, the devotee is so full, it's like eating a very big feast. And after you eat a very big feast, if somebody comes along with your absolute favorite food, you have no interest because you're full. Because you're full. You know, if you have 10 million pounds and somebody says, would you like to work hard for 10 pounds an hour? You're not interested because you're full, because you're satisfied. So because the devotee finds such complete satisfaction in making Krishna happy, they don't ask for anything for themselves. And it's sort of a paradox. Making Krishna happy is what fulfills me, but I'm not making Krishna happy to be fulfilled. I'm making Krishna happy just to make Krishna happy, which happens to fulfill me, so I can just make him happy. If you can follow that, you think about that a little bit later. So that's what ultimate dharma is. And the closer you come to that, the more that you're in dharma, and the further away from that, the more than you're in ignorance. There's a continuum. It's not that you're either in dharma or not in dharma. Like Krishna talks about the divine and demoniac, and then Arjuna says, well, aren't there gradations? And then Krishna talks about the modes of nature. So if you get really, really close to that dharma, you're in sattvagun. If you're, you know, a little bit looking at it, you're in rajagun. And if you're just the opposite, you're in tamagun. And the essence of this is to whom you're giving and what your mood is. What's your object and what's your mood? So the closer your object is to God, the more that you're in dharma. The closer your object is to yourself, the less that you're in dharma. And the more you have a mood of making Krishna happy, the more you're in dharma. And the more you have the mood of yourself at the center, the more you're in ignorance. I mean, are we the center? Anybody here the center of Bhaktivedanta Manor? No. Is Bhaktivedanta Manor the center of London? Is London the center of the world? Sorry. Is the world the center of the solar system? No, we're not the center. We're not the center. You know, I hate to break this to everybody, but when we die, everything will just go on. You know, we'll die, and the only difference in the morning program here will be maybe they'll put our picture on the Vyasa Sun for a few days, and everything else will just go on. The Arctics will go on. The classes will go on. Nobody will say, Urmila's dead. We're not going to have Bhagavatam class anymore. You know, we'll just have to leave the slot empty. Everything goes on. We're not very important. And though that's ignorance. That's ignorance. If I think I'm the center, I'm important, everything should be for me. That's ultimate. If you want to look at ultimate, absolute Dharma. And then there's what you could call relative dharma that helps to bring us to absolute dharma. And relative dharma is varnashram. Why relative? Because it's in relation to our body and mind. Ashrama is primarily related to one's age. When you're young, you're a brahmachari. When you're in the prime of life, you're a grihastha. When you're in midlife, you're a vanaprastha. When you're old, you're a sannyasi, generally speaking. That's relative to the body. And varna is relative to your psychology, your psychophysical nature. Do you enjoy playing with truth? Do you enjoy playing with caring for people? Do you enjoy playing with wealth and natural resources? Or do you enjoy playing with beauty and function and things? What do you like to play with? And then your varna is, you know, whatever you like to play with, you're supposed to take care of it. So that's very relative, because these things change from one life to another. It's not that if you're a shudra in this life, you've always been a shudra and you'll always be a shudra. Just like some lives were men, some lives were women, some lives were Indian, some lives were British, some lives were Polish. You know, it's exchange. And then, of course, in one life, generally, our ashram changes. Except for those people who stay students their whole life and are always in the Brahmacharya ashram. But for most people, their ashram changes. So therefore, it's relative dharma. But that relative dharma is supposed to be within the scope of this absolute dharma. So although the details of what constitutes dharma is quite different for the varnas and quite different for the ashramas, right? If the grihastha man treats his wife the way a sannyasi treats a woman, that would be a dharma. You follow? What's dharma for the sannyasi is a dharma for the grihastha. What's dharma for the grihastha is a dharma for the sannyasi. So therefore, you can say it's relative. The details are relative. For a shudra to work for a salary is not a dharma. But the principle remains the same, that one should be having the mood of what? What's the principle in all the ashrams and in all the varnas of dharma, which although the details may be different, will be different, will sometimes be opposite, that the ultimate dharma is the same. And that is, I'm working to please Krishna. As Krishna's servant, as Krishna's instrument, I'm giving to Krishna as his instrument, and I'm receiving from Krishna also as his instrument. I don't give to anybody out of my own power and my own shakti, with the, you know, ahankara vimudhatma, kartaham iti manyate. I don't think that I am the doer. And nor do I think the results of my actions belong to me, bhoktaram yagatapasan. Krishna is, I'm just a conduit. I'm simply a conduit. That I have my particular area. If I'm a brahmana, my area is truth and philosophy. If I'm a vaishya, my area is care and protection of people. If I'm a vaishya, my area is natural resources and animals and wealth. If I'm a shudra, my area is beauty and function and things and skills. And all of those come from Krishna. Samsaradava nalilaloka tranaya karuna gunaganatvam praptasya karuna gunaganatvam. The guru is like the cloud that's pulling the water from the ocean and then distributing it. So that should be true for everyone, should think like that. Everything's coming from Krishna. Everything, my ability is Krishna. Krishna says that, yes? I am the ability in man. I'm the intelligence of the intelligence. I am the strength of the strong. It is Krishna. So whatever I'm giving, whether I'm acting as your kula guru, whether I'm acting as your priest, whether I'm generating money, whether I'm making a beautiful chair, whatever I'm doing. Really, it's Krishna. I'm just the conduit out of Krishna's kindness that he lets me do some service. It's just his kindness. He gives me something to do. He gives me some place, something that's meaningful. So Krishna gives me the ability, and then I just simply give that to somebody else. A couple times, there's one devotee, a very, very wealthy devotee. She's a very successful businesswoman. And there's been a couple times that she asked me, I have a lot of extra money from my business. What should I give it to? And I'd give her a list of like 20. She says, you travel all over the world. You know who needs money. Give me a list. So I gave her a list of like 20 different causes. And then she picked some of them. And she said, listen, I'm very busy. Can I just give it to you and you distribute it? And it was a lot of fun. I've done this 2 or 3 times for her so far. So, you know, to take this, to give people money like that and make them happy and be a conduit. And I was thinking, it's so nice like that to be a conduit for someone else's money, to kind of to do a favor for the busy business person and do a favor for the devotees at the other end. And then I thought, well, everything I have is like that. It all belongs to somebody else. It all belongs to Krishna. I'm really just taking what Krishna has and redistributing it to try to make people happy. So that's what someone should think. Doesn't matter what your vashram or varna is. It just doesn't matter. Like Lord Kapiladev says, if the woman thinks the husband is the source of her wealth and her children and her house, then her relationship with her husband is like that of the deer with the hunter, that he's simply causing her death. Right? And the same if the husband's thinking, oh, my wife is serving me, she's my property. Yeah, whatever. The husband is thinking, I'm a conduit for Krishna. Whatever money I'm giving for my family, whatever home, Krishna's giving that. I'm just the conduit. The sannyasi's thinking, whatever learning and knowledge I have and experience I have, this is Krishna's, and I'm giving it to benefit the people. It doesn't matter. Ashram, varna, everyone is thinking like this. The land is Krishna's wife, Bhumi Devi. When the Vaishya is farming the land and taking care of the cows, thinking Krishna's cows, Krishna's land. Krishna's giving the gifts, and he's allowing me then to distribute this wealth to the people in general. And then coming from the other direction, you get some reciprocation. Just like we offer Krishna food and then we get to eat the prasadam. So this is very nicely explained in Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's commentary to Brahma Samhita text 61, that the devotee working in the world, especially if they're not completely pure, they're sacrificing for Krishna and then they're accepting whatever they get as prasadam. So the husband thinks, okay, Krishna's giving me this money to serve my wife, and if my wife smiles at me and tells me she loves me and makes my favorite food, that's Krishna's mercy on me. It's not really coming from my wife. Krishna's using my wife as an instrument. And so although one will be grateful to the wife, one is ultimately grateful to Krishna. So it's like that with everything that we do. What I'm giving from Krishna. I'm just a conduit from Krishna. And whatever you give me is just Krishna is giving me. Krishna's giving me through you. I'm giving, Krishna's letting me give through me, and you're giving to me, Krishna's allowing you to give me. It's really Krishna giving me. And whatever you give me, then I circle, it's a circle, yes? It goes this way and this way. Do you all understand? Yes. It's for all of us. Krishna's giving me something, and I'm distributing it. I can distribute it because as soon as we get something from Krishna, we're full. Correct? Yes? As soon as you connect with Krishna, you're full. So you're full. And then you're giving from Krishna. You're not the doer. You're not the doer. And you're giving to people in such a way that they'll connect with you. And they're giving something back to you. Krishna's giving to them. And they're giving to you. And what you receive, you realize it's his. And so you use it for him. And when you do that, that's dharma. That's ultimate dharma. Whatever it may look like externally, whether it looks like you're working for a bank, or it looks like you're milking the cows, or it looks like you're, you know, protecting the citizens, or whatever it looks like, it is really irrelevant. You know, whether it looks like you're studying the Shastra, or it looks like you're changing your baby's nappies. I mean, that Prabhupada would often say that Krishna doesn't care about that. That's a detail. And it's a very temporary detail. We're in this body for 8 billionths of a second of Lord Brahman, and it's really irrelevant what I'm doing in a particular, like Prabhupada wrote to Jayapataka Swami. He said, real surrender to Krishna means that You think whatever is meant to be, that I am doing, and you do it with great attention to every detail. You really do things carefully, but whatever it is, it is. So is the problem that Vasistha was taking donations from his disciples, was that the problem? Would that put somebody in the mode of ignorance? No. What's going to put you in the mode of ignorance? It's not just how you utilize it. Although, you know, we often tend to think in the Hare Krishna movement that something is okay if you give it to the right person. When I was researching for this, you know, charity in the mode of ignorance. I was looking up everything Krishna said about the mode of ignorance. Charity in the mode of ignorance can also be you give to the right person, but without respect. It can be you give to the wrong person at the wrong time, at the wrong place, but it can also be you give to the right person without respect. And charity in the mode of passion, you give to the right person at the right place, at the right time, but you want something back. You want honor or prestige, or you're doing it out of obligation, Prabhupada says. A superior told you to do it, so you're doing it, and then you regret, oh, I didn't really want to do it. So it's the consciousness. It's the consciousness. If you're thinking, I'm the doer, I'm the one who's benedicting you, it's my Shakti. I should know this. What is that? Siddham. Is it Aham Bogi? What's that? How does it start with? What's the first one? Aham Bogi, Siddham. Ishram, thank you. Ishram Aham, Aham Bogi, Siddham. I am the controller. I am the enjoyer. You know, I'm the giver. I'm giving charity out of my great knowledge as a yogic priest. I am taking your karma and giving you. That's the mode of ignorance. And your donations are meant for me, and I've deserved them, and I've earned them. Then you're in the mode of ignorance. Especially for a brahmana to be in that mentality. Especially, then your dharma is, you've lost your dharma. It's interesting, Vishwarupa says, ideally the brahmana should just get their maintenance by collecting grains from the paddy field. In other words, they should have some independent way of maintaining themselves so they're not dependent on the donations received from their disciples and the people that they help. He says that's the ideal thing. But of course, if you want to really help your disciple be in the mode of goodness, or the person you're doing the yajna for, you also have to teach them to give you donations, because as Krishna says, if they don't, they're in the mode of ignorance. Interesting, right? But you're teaching them to give donations for whose benefit? For their benefit. The mood particularly of a brahmana is, Krishna's maintaining me. And the brahmana doesn't do a yajna or anything brahminical because they figure they're going to get a donation. Like Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Instruction, which we've been studying upstairs in the evenings, he says, if you go to the home of a rich man thinking you'll get some good food to eat, then you don't have control over your tongue. You know, if you're thinking, well, okay, we have three programs to choose from. Let's go to the home of the wealthy person. We'll get some really good food and we'll get a lot of money. Of course, when Krishna was invited to Shraddhadev and Bahulasva, I think, he divided and went to both, the poor man's house and the wealthy man's house, and all the sages also divided and went to both. But Krishna was much happier eating Vidura's banana peels than getting Duryodhana's opulence. But if ever, especially a brahmana, is thinking, if I do this, I'll get donations. Let me go there, I'll get some donations. I mean, even Raghunath Das Goswami decided he didn't want to stand outside the gate for that reason. He said, I feel like I'm looking at all the people walking past, thinking, oh, will that person give me something to eat? Will that person give me something to eat? He said, I feel like a prostitute looking at all the men going, is that person going to give me a lot of money? Does that person have a lot of money in their wallet? Ooh, isn't that the mode of ignorance? If you're looking at other people like that? What can you give me? Is that understandable, why that's the mode of ignorance? It's completely me-centered as a taker. I'm doing things only if I can take something from you. That becomes my motive. I'm thinking I'm the doer, I'm working as a taker, and then I go in the mode of ignorance. And what's interesting is that his activities were not in ignorance. He's doing yajñas, he's giving advice, he's teaching the scriptures. You can't know just what's in what mode just by looking at the externals. Can you teach Bhagavatam in the mode of ignorance? Is that possible? Yes, you can, can't you? Or there was that, I wish I could remember the names. I think his name was Ram Das something. He traveled with Raghunath Bhatta Goswami to see Lord Chaitanya and Jagannath Puri. And all the way he served Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. The whole way he was serving Raghunath Bhatta Goswami personally by carrying his bags. And he was always chanting the name of Lord Ram. But when he came to Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya wanted nothing to do with him. Why? Anybody remember that story? He was an impersonalist. He was chanting Ram's name, but his motive was to merge with Ramchandra. So it's not just what you do that makes it whether you're in bhakti, sattva, rajas, and tamas. It's not just even what you use the money for that you get. That's not what constitutes dharma, which if you go through the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks to Arjuna about doing things in the mood of a yajna. It's what your mood is, it's what your motive is. So if the mood is, I'm simply acting as Krishna's instrument, as a service to Krishna. Whatever you give me, I accept as Krishna's prasadam coming through you, and I use also for his service. And I get my happiness from pleasing Krishna. I don't get my happiness from thinking I'm the doer, and I don't get my happiness from thinking I can take something from you. Then the externals, as long as they're not sinful, are irrelevant. Whether you're a Shudra, a Vaishya, a Brahmana, whether you're a Grahastha or a Brahmachari, it doesn't matter. That's simply a matter of practicality. And if one doesn't have that mentality, whatever position one is in the mode of ignorance. If the more that one, of course, again, it's a continuum. So the more one has the mentality, I'm the doer, I'm the center, I'm the giver, I'm the taker. And so much so that a Brahmana, and not only a Brahmana, but a Brahmana Vasistha Brahmana. I mean, I see that one reason these examples are there in the Shastra is so that we don't take any risks. We don't think, well, it can't happen to me. If it can happen to Vasistha, why can't it happen to me? You know, one has to be very careful. Like Prabhupada says, like a razor, you can shave your face or you can cut yourself if you're just not attentive. So one should be very attentive to this, especially those who live on charity and those who are brahmanas. So obviously it is important in our Hare Krishna movement to give remuneration to priests. It's important to maintain the brahmanas. If we don't do that, we're in the mode of ignorance. But it's important for the brahmanas not to work for maintenance from others and not to think of their work in terms of, I'm getting paid a salary to do a job. And there's some specifics as to how those consciousness can be nourished. But it's extremely important for the brahmanas never to get in the mentality that I'm the doer. On a practical level also, if you're working for a set salary that you depend on, then you tend to be compromised. That's just on a very practical level. If you have fixed expenses, and if in order to meet those fixed expenses, you have a job that pays you a fixed salary, then especially one's ability to speak the truth is going to be compromised. And because that's the brahmana's very specific and most important duty, especially the brahmana should not be put in such a position. So that's another way in which being a paid priest contributes to tamagun. So that doesn't mean the brahmanas don't accept charity, but it means that they accept very random charity. That whatever Krishna gives or doesn't give or whatever, and they don't serve on the basis of whether or not they expect to get charity in a particular place. So we can examine this in what we're doing. Am I really, do I have the mood of Krishna's agent, or do I have the mood of the doer? am I doing things so that I can get something, and do I calculate what I do according to what I can get? Because if we're not careful, if we're influenced by the mode of ignorance, then we're not really going to get the results. Then acting as a priest, all it's doing is diminishing your pious activities. You're thinking, oh, I'm acting as a priest, I'm acting as a brahmana, it's going to be so wonderful for me, it'll elevate me, but no. As soon as you get into that mentality, all that happens is your own pious bank account is draining, 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 draining. What does that mean? You're going to take birth as next life. You're the one who's going to get a low birth next life for being in that mentality. What does that mean? That means you misused your position, huh? Make sense? It's not given to you again. So we should be extremely, extremely careful. Punarma Mushika Bhava. Not to again become a mouse. That whatever facility we've been given by the grace of God, to use it very carefully, not just in the externals. In the externals, certainly, but in the mentality also, in the motives also, in our consciousness also. Whether or not other people can see it. Of course, it will be sometimes demonstrated. What your consciousness is will be revealed sometimes, like is revealed in this curse. But we should be extremely, extremely careful. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions.